91.3 FM, WLVR, Bethlehem. You're listening to Fritz Rocks, of course. I'm AJ Fritz, and something very special happening today. We're down here at Nearfest, and we're talking to the highly renowned and well-respected artist. And some of you may know him from his earlier years with the band Marillion, but that was quite a long time ago. He's been doing his own thing for many years. We're talking about the one and the only Phish. First of all, welcome to Nearfest. It's your first appearance here at Nearfest, and I understand that Nearfest kind of helped a little bit with the current tour.
Nearfest have been absolutely outstanding, because without them we wouldn't actually have an American tour on our hands. I mean, you know, when you come across the States now, I think especially since, you know, the 9/11 events, yeah. You know, it's getting harder and harder to tour. And, you know, applying for visas and, you know, especially from insurance, I mean, there's a lot of paranoia about it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with the incident that happened where, I think it was Great White or there's a Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah,
when the club burned down, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like when you've got an incident where even the radio station got sued successfully, you know, yeah. Everybody gets so nervous about, you know, putting their hands up and saying, yeah, we'll support this artist.
Sure.
So it was great. So the Nearfest guys, they signed off as our petitioners for the tour. And without them, we wouldn't even be here. So, and it was really with the Nearfest thing as well. I mean, the fact that we got this gig, it was like, well, if we're coming all the way across the pond to come and play over here for the Nearfest gig, it's like, well, why don't we try and set something else up?
Do a tour.
And originally, I mean, I thought we might get three or four gigs, but my agent, Larry Webman, who works down at Paradigm, he was stunning, and he came back after 2 weeks and he had 15 shows for us.
Wow.
So it was a big call. It's been hard. I mean, you know, this is not, you know, for myself, I mean, it's not a profit-making tour. I mean, I'm actually losing money on the actual tickets.
Oh, wow.
And it's completely supported by our merchandise here. So it's, you know, without that, we wouldn't be able to come across. And it's always really tough, you know, when you come, I mean, just like the other night in New York, you know, you're doing BB King's and you're having to handle over kind of 20% of your merchandise to a club and concessions. It gets really annoying.
Yeah, that's, that, man, a lot of these festivals and some of your bigger clubs will do that. They want to hit the artist. I mean,
so why?
My
God. Give us a share of the beer money.
You know, yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, you're coming across, as I said, I mean, we got a problem in Europe as well, and that people keep on saying, you know, they're not going to put the ticket prices up, you know, and like, and, you know, it's costing more and more to go on the road. I mean, even gas and stuff. I mean, you know, you're whinging about $4 a gallon for gas. We're paying 10.
10, I know.
And it's, you know, you start stroking that on a bus and putting that together. Plus, you know, every government, the same as over here, everybody's trying to rape the artist and,
oh,
you know,
everyone's taxes. Got their hands and everything.
And it's, the problem is, there seems to be this, you know, I mean, I can honestly say that the American government has probably spent more money processing forms and all the rest of all the bureaucracy, the cost of the bureaucracy that's gone into to this tour, analysing this tour,
yeah.
is more than the tour is probably would gross in the first case, you know.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, it's people, they don't seem to recognize, there's a lot of people in government don't seem to recognize that there is a hell of a difference between a stadium tour and a club tour.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and, you know, when you're coming across, I mean, you know, our visas are about $1,200 a guy.
Yeah.
You know, plus there's, of course, the process, which is about $2,500.
Wow.
And, I mean, we had to, I mean, even like with the American Embassy down in London, everybody's got to go for an interview. So I had to pull everybody in my band and crew, had to fly or train down to London.
Oh,
and, you know, it's about $600 a guy to get them in London, put them on the hotel for an hour interview, and it's becoming very, very difficult to tour. Very, very difficult. So, I mean, thanks to Yatta, my production manager, and Larry Webman, I mean, we've managed to pull it off, and together with the Nearfest guys, I mean, with this particular gig, I mean, it's been the keystone to the entire tour.
I think you're going to do well tonight.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Nearfest always does well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think the audience is, you know, I mean, because everything was focused on this gig as well, I mean, I know there's people coming in from all over the country to.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's pretty special night, which is why we've put together some extra songs and things.
Well, here's an odd thing. Are you aware of Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have it right here on Wikipedia. They actually took the time to update Wikipedia and put it on the front page of Wikipedia that you're appearing at Nearfest tonight, which I thought was quite the testament to Nearfest in itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they took the time to say, hey, he's going to be appearing at Nearfest.
I mean, it's great. I mean, it's quite exciting. I mean, I've got the new album, 13 Stars, you know, being released across here on Koch. And, you know, the response to 13 Stars, the reviews have been great. There's a great buzz on the internet about the album.
Oh, it's
and about
a huge
the tour.
Buzz.
And it's really, it's quite strange, you know. I first came across here in 1983. And Marillion, you know, was always a kind of, very much an underground cult outfit, you know, with what we did here. We didn't tour here enough, by any means. We should have toured here an awful lot more in the early days. And I think it would have made a big difference to the band if we'd actually got an edge in the States. But it's ironic that, you know, I'm now 50-year-old, you know, it's the 13th album that I've been involved in, you know, including the four I did with Marillion. And I'm now turning around and I'm a, you know, there's something happening here now. I mean, we're already, I mean, there's a... we're putting feelers out at the moment for coming back in September and doing some of the southern states, like, you know, going through, coming from Mexico, going into Texas, perhaps Southern California and across towards Atlanta, Florida. So that's what we're examining now. And, if, you know, it would be absolutely, as I said, totally and unbelievably ironic if at the age of 50, you know, on my 13th studio album, that I managed to get something going over here.
I'm
it would be lovely. You know?
Yeah, I'm at the same
I
age.
Like this sun. I like this. I do. I love this sun. I love this bit where my skin goes from pale blue to red.
To red. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about 13th Star. That's your latest album. You said, you know, your 13th studio album. Now, this particular album, Fish, really puts your heart on, you know, on the sleeve for all the listeners to hear. And can you tell the listener how the title came to be and what the album really represents for you?
Title came out, I mean... I was going out with somebody for about a year, and we'd gone down, I'd taken for the romantic kind of holiday, so we went down to Egypt and did the cruise on the Nile vibe.
Nice.
And then we went to, when we were there, we went up to the Valley of the Kings, which is where Tutankhamun was buried. It's right. A lot of the major kind of pharaohs.
Yeah.
And inside a lot of the tombs, there's a... When you go in, the ceiling of the tomb is actually painted with this blue wash, okay, on which are painted by hand tens of thousands of stars, and it denotes heaven.
Wow.
And when I saw it, I just thought it was just such an amazing symbol.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've got to use this. You know, there was just something, I don't know, it's the very fact that somebody paints heaven on the inside of a tomb. And but it had a lot to do with, for example, the pharaohs. The whole idea of the pharaohs is when they put them in the tomb, when they shut the tomb, the idea is that the pharaoh who's died, he goes up to Sirius, right? And he meets up with all the old pharaohs, and they have a little talk.
Yeah.
And he basically comes back with the accumulated wisdom of the ages.
Okay.
And when he comes back, and then the next pharaoh, the next deity kind of comes out, and he's supposed to represent, you know,
all the deities.
He's come back with all the wisdom
from all of them.
And I just liked that idea, and it was you know, and when it came to the end of that year, the relationship that I was in kind of split up for various reasons. And I started to put the album together, and I got involved in a lot of introspection, a lot of retrospection about kind of where my life had been in particular relationships. And I kind of worked out that it was, well, for a start, I knew it was my 13th album. 13's always been a lucky number for me. And then when I started looking at it, kind of females in my life that had played a really important part in kind of shaping my heart, there was basically 12. And, you know, the one that I just split up from, I looked at it as being the 12, so it was like, I'm going to search this number 13 now, and that's got to be the lucky one.
Yeah.
And then we got back together again. I got back together with this particular female, and we got engaged to get married on Valentine's Day. And during that point, I was writing the album. So I started writing the album at the split. Then we got back together again. And I was working with Steve Vances, who's my very extremely talented bass player. And it was the first time he'd ever written with anybody. And we started writing it in the January. So we kind of got back together again, writing it through to April. The wedding's supposed to be in August. And April, we kind of... I'm moving into the writing, but a lot of the lyrics were left
because
we were kind of putting musical stuff together.
Get the arrangements together.
Yeah.
And then
you do all the tidying up with a big lyric. Right. You know, you've got the verse chorus format, but you know, the big meaty parts were kind of like still to be placed in and sculpted.
Right.
So we moved into May, where we would just start principal recording with Callum Malcolm, our producer, who's done like the Blue Nile, he's done Wet, Wet, Wet and stuff. He's a very good producer, great year, great for arrangements. And on 2 days after the invitations for the wedding were sent out, 10 weeks before the wedding, on the first day of principal recording, my fiance decided she didn't want to get married and walked out, and I've never seen her since.
Oh, wow.
And I was left with a wedding which was completely organized. Complete church booked, everything.
Talk about a stake through the heart, man.
And I had to deal with that, you know, during the recording of the album. And I was, you know, obviously, my house is my studio. My studio is my house. So
yeah.
When we actually do the recording, you know, basically we move the furniture and it's like the drum kit goes in and stuff like that. So I was actually singing in the place where, you know, we'd been living together for the last 3-4 months. And it was like kind of the roses that were dried, that were hanging from the roof beam that I'd given to her on Valentine's Day.
Oh,
and the couch and all that. I mean, it was really, it was very traumatic.
It must have been very difficult for you to get
through. But I had two choices, you know, either lay on the floor and
sulk.
Yeah, and with authority for myself.
Right.
Or I got up and fought, and I had a band relying on me, I had a tour that was getting booked. I mean, everybody was relying on me to make this album.
Yeah.
And I only had this producer for 6 weeks, so we basically stood up and went on fighting. And made what has been acclaimed, and I think it's probably the best album I've ever made.
So, yeah, that's what the critics are saying, and that's what the fans.
But it was—I wouldn't want to go through that again. I mean, you know, I mean, the catharsis that was involved in the album. I mean, you know, you can hear them in some of the recordings. I mean, you can hear the cracks in my voice. I mean, the emotion in it is very, very powerful.
Well, that's why I said you really poured your heart and you put it out on your sleeve, and it's obvious. It's on the record. It's really there. You captured that. Your current tour, Frank Usher's first appearance in the States.
Yes, for example, British played some brilliant guitar. I mean, I've known Frank since I was about 20 years old. And, you know, he was in the very first band that I joined. Frank was the guitarist. And Frank came in, and that's always said to him, I said, like, you know, if I ever go make a solo album, I want to get you in the band. And he came up and he played on the Vigil album. And he's been in and out of the band for years. But, I mean, this time, I think he's playing just marvelous, marvelous guitar. I mean, you'll hear it tonight.
And then Steve, who actually co-wrote
Steve
the Anses, album with
you. Brilliant
how's
bass player.
How's his fingers holding up?
Is there coming on? He hit him hard. He hadn't played bass for a while at like gig bass. You know what I mean? There's one thing playing gig bass
playing
in the studio.
In the studio's one
thing. And he plays a hard player. You know, he's a very talented man.
Yeah.
And he was a major part in the writing of this album. But I mean, it's worked out really well. I mean, he did a lot of. He was very important in the putting the structures together in the early days as well. I mean, a lot of the demos, I mean, he's a very technically minded guy, so a lot of the demos that were getting put together, a lot of this stuff was actually he'd be able to use on the principal recording.
It must be great to have these guys along with you for this tour, you know, on this time around. But a little bit about the music industry, okay, because you're obviously a part of it, all right? Oh, and by the way, you're listening to 91.3 FM WLVR Bethlehem. It's Fritz Rocks. I'm AJ Fritz. We're talking to the legendary Fish right now. The music industry. A lot of changes in the last 20 years in this industry.
It's a completely different industry.
Completely different ballgame now. And you're kind of regarded as a pioneer in the web marketing with the company. And you've stated clearly in interviews and on your website that the company, the website, actually helps you finance the projects with the revenue that you earn from the website.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you, what was the spark that sent you in that direction? Was it Napster? Was it downloading? How did you have the foresight to see where this was going to go?
But I came out of Polydor. I was signing to Polydor Records just after my second solo album. For my second solo album, Internal Exile. And then I did Songs from the Mirror. I'd come through a particularly traumatic time then with legal issues I had with EMI, and you know, I felt raped when I came out of that lot. And really, no major record company wanted to touch me. I was known as a maverick. I still am known as a bit of a maverick. And I speak my mind. Some people really don't like it. And
Well, we respect that.
I think some people just looked on me as being a difficult artist. And it was kind of, I really didn't want to go back in another record company and do another kind of, you know, and do the one album or two albums, whatever. It's like, you know, and I decided to go independent from the Dick Brothers label. And at that point, a lot of the web stuff was just starting to move. You know, this was when, you know, it was very, very basic and simple, and we just kind of went with it. And I was lucky that, you know, I've had some people like Mo Warden, who's my web mistress. She was phenomenal in kind of bringing the site together, etc., etc. And we just naturally fell into it. And it was through necessity. I mean, you know, the numbers, you know, the numbers were going down and you just had to maximize your income. And it was like retail was changing. The big chain stores were, you know, demanding more and more discounts. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you sell 40, 50,000 albums and the album costs £60,000 to make, if I was going just purely through retail, I couldn't make that album.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, at retail, you're lucky if you pick up $2 an album. You know? And it's, you know, with that, you know, you've either got a choice to just take the quality of the albums down or you know, try some other way. And this is what we do. So we sell direct, which means that, you know, for example, 13 Star, when it was released, we managed to sell the album direct. We sold about 10,000 units directly to fans or a special edition, which we still got a couple left. And with that, it's, you know, we had the gain that we got, the profit we earned, we were able to pay for the album and to instigate the promotion as it went into retail in the second phase.
Okay.
And, you know, between that and the merchandise we sell at the gigs, you know, it keeps me alive. You know, I'm not a millionaire, no desire to be one. But, you know, I earn a living and I keep a roof over my head and I'm able to make an album every couple of years, you know.
Gardener, forestry worker, Marillion front man, and now a highly renowned and respected solo artist. What was the catalyst for you getting into this whole business?
I just love music. I mean, that's why I got into it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. I've just rattled off about $300 down there on CDs. it's one of them things where...
Sell more merch tonight, Fish.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love the music. You know, I still love music. I mean, I don't follow a lot of new music, but, I mean, there's a lot of thing when you come at one of these kind of prog gigs. I mean, like, you've got all the albums that you had to sell to pay your rent when you were a young musician.
Yeah.
You suddenly get the money later on in your life and you buy all the albums back. You know?
Exactly.
So that's what I've been kind of doing. I mean, you know, get a final albums, and of course I'm a DJ as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I do on Planet Rock, which is the station I work for.
We're going to get to that. I want to talk to you about that.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I picked up a load of material that, you know, they'll probably hear when I go in air again when I get back.
You know? Why Fish for the name?
Oh, staying in the water, staying in the bath. I love water.
You love the water.
Scuba diving, love the water. You know, it's an ancient one. It's a boring story.
I love the water myself.
When you've got a name like Derek William Dick, you need a nickname pretty fast.
Well, it's a good one. It really is. You just mentioned Fish on Friday, Planet Rock. And what some of your fans may not know is that May of 2008, actually, Fish on Fridays won the Silver Award for Music Broadcaster of the Year, the UK Sony Radio Academy Awards of 2008. What are you playing on the air?
Well, I'll actually point out that last night I came from New York, where I was at the New York Radio Festival Awards, and I just picked up a gold for Best Scheduled Program. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
Really cool.
What kind of artist? What are you doing?
I play anything. I mean, Trevor White, my producer, he basically, he wanted me to come on the station. I said, well, come on. But I said, I'm not going to go on the computer. You know, I'm not going to be sitting there in between Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith tracks, you know.
No, you wanted to play.
And I said, if I'm going to do a program, I want free play.
Right.
You know, and I said, anything goes in. He gave me it. And I've been playing stuff like Gentle Giant, Van de Graaff Generator. I mean, it was great actually meeting Peter Hamill earlier on, because I've not seen him for years. He was in the first script tour in 1983.
I
know, but I was at the New York Awards last night.
Yeah.
I played Peter's stuff, Van de Graaff, Gentle Giant. I've played, you know, the kind of more obscure Genesis and Floyd stuff. But on top of that, you know, there's things like Cannes, Banco, PFM, you know, but as well as that, there's Jackson Brown. I still play Zeppelin. I still play Bits of Purple. I play Bits of Iron Maiden. I mean, it's right across the board.
So it's
good. I just play music that I like to hear.
Yeah, nice mix of stuff.
And, you know, it's combined with a lot of stories. When I was making the program, we were in the middle of doing 30 Stars. So what we were doing was we were taking the demos from the album out and playing them on air.
Yeah.
And we were showing people how the songs were building. You know?
Wow, that's not something you get to hear on radio every day.
It was pretty cool.
You know? I saw some notes that a guy named Malcolm Blunell, and we all know who Tony Iommi is, and Ian Anderson, who I'm going to be interviewing shortly, is coming to Music Fest, and Gary Moore, bought the station. Now, do you still own a part of this thing?
No, not really.
But you were...
I'm very involved in
you
this
You were
station.
Involved in this.
I'm very involved with the station, and as I said, I mean, I'm going back, and I've got another... I think another 4 months stint, 3 months, 4 months stint on the station when I get the time in between the touring. So most probably it will be, that'll be happening towards the end of the year.
Okay.
And then I dip into it. But I know you. I was working with Jethro Tull. Jethro Tull were up in Edinburgh about a month and a half ago, and it was great because I got to go on a stage with him, which was brilliant. I've known the Tull boys for years. I mean,
sure.
Really supported Tull, and then Tull supported us, and then I supported Tull as a solo artist, and they've worked with me as well and other festivals. So it's like, it's an old adage. It's like, you know, always remember, like, never piss people off when you're on the way up, because you're going to meet them all the way
down. That's right. You're going to see them all on the way down. That's true.
I think that's a classic example where, you know, it's like we supported them, they supported us, then you go back to supporting them again and things, and then they support you. And it's great, and they're lovely people. Ian's a lovely guy.
Yeah, he is. I've interviewed him before, and he's such a great man. Mm. He's got so many accomplishments. But is it terrestrial radio, or is it strictly internet radio?
It's digital.
Digital radio.
Yeah.
Okay. So can you listen to it online on the internet? Excellent. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about Fish TV?
The Fish TV thing is just another idea. It was an extension of the website, and you know, I've got a lot of 8mm footage from way back, but not from the early days, but when I went solo, and that's hours and hours and hours of it. So we started to put little programs together, and it's a streaming video, basically, that's part of a subscription thing that you can get on the website. It's been interesting to do, but I'm working on. It's going to be interesting because I'm going to be working on the back catalogue. Oh, nice. And we're looking at doing a complete reissue. And what we're looking at doing is using a lot of the... I've got footage from most of the solo years from bits and pieces of things. So we're going to actually put together like many documentaries on every... CD. But that will be up until well in the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
So that, again, will be part of the new American deal.
Yeah. Are there any particular things that keep you motivated and dedicated to your craft and your fans?
As long as I'm having fun and I've got a smile on my face, then it's great.
Yeah.
When I'm a miserable bastard, you know about it. But if I get to the point where I don't enjoy it, that's when I stop.
Yeah.
You know, being a singer is tough. I mean, I smoke cigarettes, I shouldn't, I cut right down, but I mean...
But that's okay, I'm a smoker too, and I'm in radio, you know?
Well, you can do that in radio, because you get that lovely deep radio voice. There's a lovely deep radio voice, but then you can't do it when you're a singer.
No, you can't.
The problem is, like, every time you go on a movie set, you know, with a voice like this, everybody goes like, wow, what a great timbre.
That's right.
But, you know, when you're singing, you've got to watch the strain.
Yeah, you've got to be...
I'm 4 hours off a show tomorrow. I'm not eating any food yet.
I'm sitting here
doing a reading interview talking my ass off.
Well, we're almost done here, Fish. By the way, you're listening to 91.3 FM WLVR Bethlehem. It is Fritz Rocks. I'm AJ Fritz. We're talking to Fish. And why don't we do this? Why don't we at least wrap things up and tell the listener how they can stay in contact with Fish and with your various emails and your blogs. Why don't you repeat the website for everybody and let them know how they can find you.
The website is www.thecompany.com, and there is a hyphen between the and company. You can also reach it by going 13star.com, so it's 13, the number is 13star.com, but the main site is called thecompany.com with a hyphen between the and company.
Beautiful. And what can the fans expect at Nearfest tonight in the set?
Hopefully a guy that's like, you know, in action and pumping it out, and you know, a voice that doesn't get too fragged by the end of the set, because it's going to be a bit of a long one tonight.
Oh, great.
Well, we're playing some extra songs tonight.
Super. Yeah. So we're getting a great set tonight. Well, yep. Fish, I want to say thank you for coming to the Lehigh Valley.
Thank you.
And hopefully you'll come back again to the Lehigh Valley.
Uh-huh.
This is your first, I think this is your first appearance here in the Lehigh Valley area, mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be quite a treat for all the fans.
That's cool.
Everybody, and by the way, I want you to know that this whole thing was put together by your fans.
Mm.
The Fishhead fans
mm.
got me the information, got me your publicist's name and number. So it was the Fishheads
who
put this whole interview together. So let's give thanks to them, man.
Yes, Fishheads are great people.
Thank you
very much.
Well, all right, thank you so much, Fish, all right? And we look forward to the performance, all right?
Great, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Cool.